Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Over the Rainbow Show with your host, Bob Brown. On Friday, the 8th of July at 3 p.m. Eastern Time, 12 o'clock Pacific Time, and 8 p.m. UK Time. And to all our listeners from around the world, the number to ring the show is 347-539-5367, and from the UK, 001-347-539-5367, and the chat room is open. So anybody who wants to go into the chat room can sign into it. Pretty chalky tonight. So you can go in the chat room and leave a message. Well, just a couple of things I'd like to talk about before we start the show. A good friend of mine, Paul, called Paul Sinclair. He's got a new book out called The Truth That Leaves No Proof. Truth Proof. It's all about the northeast coast of the UK, where Paul lives, and I live there as well. So there's lots of mysteries. There's lots of different aircraft going missing over the ocean. People going missing. Been quite a few people gone missing over the years. Just another person just gone missing last week as well. There's been a Black Panther being sighted. There's been all sorts of, there's been a dragon sighted. There's been all different sorts of different animals and mysteries and mounds. Oh, it's a truly fascinating book. It's out on Kindle at the moment. But in 2 weeks' time, so I believe, it's out on paperback. So, Truth Proof. Get everyone out there, look on Amazon, and you'll find it a really interesting read. Well, I'm due to go in hospital in 2 weeks' time. I think the 19th of July. to have my put a new kneecap in my left knee. So hopefully, I might be laid up a couple of weeks, or 3 or 4 weeks, but hopefully I'll be still doing my shows. Hopefully. I'm sure I will be anyway. I can't keep still, so I'm dreading it really. It's been stopped at home, and it do my head in. And well, tonight's show, we've got a good, somebody really good on tonight. We're going to talk about UFOs, the Phoenix Lights, and some of his other cases. So tonight, I'd like to, a good friend of mine called Russell Asbill. Now, Russell's from Arizona. He works for MUFON. He's been a MUFON Investigator of the Year for Phoenix MUFON. He's been an investigator for 4 years, although he's been interested in UFOs since he was a young child. He was born in Arizona and lived there all his life. He's also a paranormal investigator and also award-winning novelist and photographer. Can we please welcome Russell Asbill to the show? Hello, Russell.
Well, hello, Bob, and thank you for having me on the show. It's a real pleasure.
Oh, it's fine. I'm sure we'll have a wonderful show tonight. Can you just give us a brief outline about yourself?
Well, like you said, I'm a certified MUFON investigator, but just want to make it clear, I don't speak for the organization itself. I do all of this is, you know, my own opinion and stuff that I've learned as an investigator, and we have some interesting stuff here. And like you said, you know, I was born in Arizona, lived here all my life. I've been interested in UFOs. I've only seen a couple myself, personally. One of which was the Phoenix Lights. I did see those. A lot of people here in the Phoenix area saw those. It's kind of hard to miss them, actually. But I also, probably back in the 70s, I was driving north towards Flagstaff from Phoenix, and I saw a fireball. And it was fair size, probably 10 foot in diameter. Just kind of, I was driving a pickup north, and it did pace my truck for probably upwards of a mile, and then it just burnt out. But that's my personal experiences with UFOs.
It's strange, isn't it? You know, I saw one in, I still think it's about 1962 or 63, I can't remember. I think, I think our order was about 16, I think, at the time. But I saw this over a golf course, and it like a cigar-shaped object, quite big, I should say, when I was looking at it. And I told the local paper, and when I went into work the day after that, I just got ridiculed. They kept saying, "Oh, you were drunk at the time. It wasn't that. What are you doing?" I just said, "Look, that's what I saw. If you don't believe me, you don't believe me." But and I thought it was fascinating at that time. So I've always been interested in that myself. And, you know, I've seen one since, but that's quite, that was last year, up in the sky, one early morning. And it was quite about 7 o'clock in winter time, moving across the sky. But that's what I've got as well, like. But we were just talking before the show about... do you think there'll be a disclosure? And we're just talking about that, and you were saying, but you don't think so.
No, I'd be really surprised if the government, U.S. government, or U.K. for that matter, actually come out and discloses what they actually know and contact that they've had on a governmental level with, you know, the inhabitants of UFOs. I think disclosure will come when the occupants of the UFOs themselves actually land and come out in an area where the government can no longer deny it. But until that happens, I'd be very surprised if the government actually discloses what they know.
Yeah, because they know what's happening, you know, from years of, well, of experience when you talk to other people, they all say the same, you know. They know a lot more than what we think about, you know, the aircraft. I'm sure they've got aircraft what can do what aliens do as well.
Yeah, and quite honestly, back in 1954, supposedly, our President Eisenhower met with some aliens over at what is now, I guess, Edwards Air Force Base.
Yeah.
It was Mirac at the time, I guess, and entered into a treaty which allowed them to basically abduct a certain amount of humans. Supposedly, they weren't supposed to hurt us in exchange for technology. And so, you know, maybe the government is hiding that because they don't want to disclose, you know, what what they did to the American people. And supposedly the aliens really didn't keep their part of the treaty, and that's where the cattle mutilations and who knows, you know, we have so many people that just mysteriously go missing every year. You know, could the aliens be part of it?
I believe it's thousands of people go missing in America, isn't there?
Oh, absolutely. And right now we have a very strange phenomenon going on where people disappear from our national parks, and the government just really covers it up. But a lot of these people seem to be tied to the medical field, which makes it even stranger. So,
yes.
But yeah, I mean, who knows what happens to those people? So,
but it happens in the UK. Paul's book, what's just come out as well, I know I'll keep on about it, but around our area alone, there's been about 14 people disappeared in the last 10 years.
Quite a bit.
I know we live by the sea, but there's none of their bodies ever found.
Yeah, it sounds, you know, I was listening to your introduction there, it sounds like you have your own, you know, Bermuda Triangle area.
We
kind
do.
Of up in that area.
Believe it or not, when the fishermen, because I know some fishermen myself, when they fish out there, they say, oh, we see UFOs all the time. He says, yeah, they come and go, we see them across. They fish about 6 or 7, about 10 miles away, and sometimes a bit further afield, and he said it's always been talked about being a triangle around this area from Flamborough out and across and back again, and it seems that area, there's lots of things happening in that area. So down this coast we get a lot of UFO sightings all the time. You know, if anybody sees anything, they come in shop and tell me, and then I say, right, I'm going to give you Paul's number. He'll come and see to you and take all your details. But I know we're... anyway, we're going to talk about some of your cases.
Okay,
I'd like to talk about the old man of 85 years old.
Oh, the old man case. That's interesting. Now, this is one that I know about, but I did not personally work on it. But it is absolutely fascinating. And it took place on the, I believe, Navajo Indian Reservation, and around March of 2009. Now, this guy was living in a very rural area of the reservation. He didn't even have running water. I believe he had electricity, but I believe it was solar. And he did have solar lights that lit up a path kind of around his house, and he had an outhouse for a bathroom. So, and they lit that up, and that'll come into this. And one night around midnight, some mysterious lights started appearing around his house. He has no telephone. And they were about 15 foot in diameter.
Yeah.
And this craft was hovering about treetop level. with the light shining down. And then the lights, you know, move towards his house. And halfway to his residence, he had two dogs. One was pretty vicious and one was friendly. But, you know, his friendly dog yelped and just took off and hid. And the one that was normally vicious just hid in his doghouse. And it was, I guess, chained up where it couldn't come out. And the guy had no fence. Anyway, the lights continued coming to his house, and, you know, he's peeking out at the strange occurrence. And he saw what amounts to, your listeners are probably familiar with the grays, I would assume, but in case anyone isn't, they're about 3.5-4 foot tall, very frail looking, no hair, you know, big black almond-shaped eyes. They're the ones that you normally see, you know, associated with UFOs. But anyway, there were four of them kind of walking up towards his house. They were all carrying what it looked like light wands, different colors. One was red, one was yellow, another was blue, and I believe the other one was green. But they seemed very fascinated by the man's solar lights that were lighting his path. I don't know why, but they seemed to be really looking at those, he said.
Hmm.
And then they were, like, taking them apart. But the lights, as the aliens got to them, would go out. And then as the aliens moved away from them, they'd come back on, which was interesting. The guy decided to go out and confront them. And as he went out the back of his house, he fell. And by the time he got up, they were almost back to their ship, which was a fair distance away. It was investigated by some federal agents. We have some Navajo Rangers, which are tribal members that are licensed federal agents, law enforcement. And they came out and studied it and took radiation readings, electromagnetic readings. They did find some odd circular indentations leading away from his house towards where he had reported the ship had landed. And it was also the federal government was really interested in. They sent the Environmental Protection Agency out in their white bunny suits to take samples. And another interesting piece of this is the one dog that was normally friendly, when he saw the people with the in the white, you know, environmental suits, you know, it just ran and hid. And then something else, the dog, who was very healthy, and even at this point, just mysteriously died about a week later. But even after that, you know, the Navajo Rangers noticed there was a lot of kind of the black helicopters that, you know, everyone hears about would fly over in formation over this area in various directions. And even some highly sophisticated helicopters that were almost silent. And for anyone who's been around a helicopter, one thing they're not is silent.
Correct.
And then also, the same night that this happened, in another house, you know, a few miles down the road, they had a dog that had a litter of puppies, and all 8 puppies disappeared that night.
Oh.
Yeah, so. And it was thoroughly investigated, but it's odd that the federal government really puts that much effort into it, so they must have found it very credible, even though they claim they don't investigate UFOs. They sure did this one.
But it sounds as though the round is false, looking for something, because if you say there's aliens, or else they were like thinking there might be some bodies around or whatever, because they're usually coming false like that.
Yeah, it's odd. That's the only time I've really heard them do that. I'm sure they do it other times, but that's the only one that I'm personally aware of. And I found that very fascinating, you know, the whole story.
I think he was very shook up as well about it.
Oh, the man. Yeah, he was very yes. shook up, needless to say.
Oh, what a shame. And he said his dog died as well.
Yeah, the friendly one died about a week later. And the Rangers, if they had known about that, they didn't know about it until sometime afterwards. You know, they would have sent the dog out for an autopsy. But the dog was very healthy up until then. And so they figure it's probably related some way, but there's no way to be sure.
That's so true as well. I know we were talking about Bigfoot and all that and Sasquatch, but it's strange, but when you talk to a lot of other people, they always say when there's Bigfoots around, there's alien craft around.
Yeah, and we've had some Bigfoot reported up, once again, up a kind of Four Corners area along the reservations. And once again, the Navajo Rangers have investigated it, and I've seen some of their castings, and the feet on these things are like 2 foot long. They're huge,
yeah.
And they have huge strides, and they've seen them where they've gone out and lifted huge logs to throw over along a riverbank, and I guess they throw these logs over, turn these big logs over to look for grubs underneath to eat.
Yeah.
And they've taken hair samples. They've gotten hair samples, and I've seen them too. They've sent them out for DNA testing, and it comes back unknown carnivore. So,
Russell, when you watch TV programs and documentaries on Bigfoot, I suppose you don't realize how big them feet are. So it just shows you a photo, and he puts a foot there or something. But like you were saying, there must be massive feet.
Yeah, and supposedly they're about 8 foot high. I've never seen one myself.
No.
And I guess they travel in groups. And one of the reasons why you don't find a dead body or anything, I guess they carry away their dead.
Yeah.
From what I understand.
Yeah, that's
so,
what I understood as well.
So, and I heard they have a howl that will just send a shiver down your spine.
Oh, yes, Robert. Yes. Yeah, I've heard that before as well. And but I'd love to go on one of those hunts with people. And it must be fascinating to go on one of those because the adrenaline, it must be in you thinking, oh, we're going to see something tonight or not.
Well, it would be exciting, that's for sure. I don't think I'd be very comfortable in the forest at night, you know, with them howling around me, you know, to be honest with you. You know, considering the size of them, and they're very skilled at moving through the forest.
Yeah.
So.
We're going to talk about the next case. It's a mother and daughter case. The case also takes place in the Indian reservation.
This is another one. And we're talking about some of my favorite cases here. I mean, I haven't worked on them myself. I just want to be clear on that. But this one's that, you know, I've learned about that are very credible. And this was a mother-daughter is on the reservation, and they were coming back from Gallup, New Mexico, on a shopping trip. And they were on Highway 191. It was just after 7 p.m., just after dark. The mother was driving, and the daughter was listening to music on headphones, just kind of oblivious to everything. And with most of these, they're the only cars on the road. And one thing, you know, after knowing this, anytime I'm out in the middle of nowhere driving by myself, it kind of creeps me out. I kind of watch around myself because that's when stuff seems to happen. But anyway, the mother, you know, looks off to her left, and there was a whole string of lights across this. It looked to me, I saw the photos, and it's probably about half a mile away or so, across this, like, mountaintop or plateau. They said they were about 100 yards long, and they were just there, and she thought it was odd. And so she pokes her daughter, who, you know, starts looking at it. And as they're looking at it, suddenly it becomes like a wall of lights, three stories high and about 100 yards long. And it has flashes of light from the side, and they're all kind of like it had windows in it. But this is in the middle of nowhere. I mean, there's no place to do it. So the mother wanted to drive towards it, you know, get off and, you know, I guess there's a dirt road heading up to it. But the daughters absolutely said no. But then after a while, the lights turned off of this craft, and, you know, they heard a big sonic boom, and a glow could be seen behind this mountain. Now, there's not a lot of homes in the area, but all the power went out with all of them. And the investigators went out there, walked up to the area, but they couldn't find any evidence of anything happening there. But they felt it was a credible case. So, yeah, that's the one there. But that's, once again, on the Indian reservation after dark, when they were all alone.
There seems to be a lot around India reservations. Do you think it's to do with energy around there, or is it very deserted?
Well, I think this is just my personal opinion. I think the with the Native Americans here, you know, they actually acknowledge their existence, and you know, they call them star people. There's been some sort of connection that goes back centuries, but part of it is it's just so remote. You know, the UFOs can operate around there with very little chance of being detected, because, you know, in this day and age, with the sophisticated, with, you know, electricity and roads and everything, it's hard to imagine places that are that desolate still. Like I said, with the old man case, he didn't even have running water. And, you know, everything is, you know, dirt road, no telephone. You know, and he had an outhouse for a bathroom. So I think that's part of it, you know, quite honestly. And yeah, they've probably been operating in that area for, you know, who knows how long.
Hundreds of years, probably.
Yeah, could be. Could easily be.
But you say the Native Americans out there, I presume they talk about the aliens, and their grandfathers have probably spoken to them about them as well, haven't they? And it's been passed down.
Yeah, I believe they have, but I don't think, you know, I think they know about them more than talk about it, because they don't really want to bring it to the public's attention, but, you know, it happens, and they will report it to people that, you know, will listen. There's been instances of where, you know, like everyone else, you know, people, you know, just put them down and, you know, say, oh, you're drunk at the time or whatever. And that could be a person that doesn't even drink. And sometimes it'd be a group of people that see it, and people just dismiss it because they don't want to deal with it. So, but they're aware of it. I don't know of instances where they publicly disclose it. It's just information that that we learn about and comes from there.
Yeah, that's true. What do you think about mutations of animals and cows and things like that?
Yeah, and that happens up on the reservation as well. But usually by the time the Navajo Rangers get there, they're pretty well decayed. And they were saying that after 3 days, they can botulism forms that I think they refer to it as weapon grade. And so they have it, you know, the cattle mutilations happen there, but they haven't really gone in it to investigate because they don't learn about them quick enough before it's too dangerous to actually investigate them.
Yeah, because you know, as you say, but it must be some sort of technology because there's never any blood around.
No, usually, you know, the blood's been drained and certain organs are removed. I think they use like a laser scalpel because it cauterizes the wherever it's cut out.
Yeah.
And it's very, very precise cut. And something else, too, they found some, and I found this interesting, where it looks like they've been dropped out of, there'd be a big indentation where the cow is, where it's like it's been tossed out of the aircraft, because where it hits the ground, it puts a big dent. Not all the time, but...
Well, but some of the time it's happened like that. So they've even taken the cow away and done more work on it and then just dropped it out of the sky.
Yeah, it appears so. And that could explain why there's no blood around, too. Maybe there's plenty of blood up in wherever they're doing the, you know, their butchery.
Yes. That's true, yeah.
I know we were talking
before the show about, you were saying there's a lot of people go missing in America, something like, say, 3,000 people, and you say there's a lot of doctors gone missing.
Yeah, and this is odd, and there's a gentleman that's actually investigating this pretty heavily, but a lot of people go missing in our national parks here in the United States just mysteriously, and a lot of them seem to be connected to the medical industry, doctors, nurses, paramedics, and some are very odd. Like, for instance, and I'm going from memory here, I hope I get it right, but there was a group of cross-country skiers, and they were going along, you know, this set path, and one of the guys was, you know, had a lot more energy than the rest of the group, and so the group was going to take a rest, and there were markers, I guess, every mile along this trail they were on in the snow, and... Well, this guy, they found his body. But anyway, but he gets odd. Anyway, he decided he didn't want to wait for him, and he would meet him at the next, you know, rest point, the next junction. And so he went on ahead, and then they followed, and they got up to the next place, and he wasn't there. And no evidence that he'd got there. And anyway, eventually, you know, it's like, you know, where'd this guy go? Well, his body was found not too long afterwards, back behind the group a couple miles. Very odd, but he was dead. But, you know, it was strange how he got past in the other direction. But a lot of times people just plain go missing. And the governments, I would think, know something about it because they sure cover it up and certainly don't want to talk about it. I don't know if they don't want to talk about it because they... afraid of scaring tourists away, or I don't know. It's odd though that, you know, a lot of the people that go missing are all related to medical field.
And never to be seen again.
Yes, yeah, a lot of them.
No body found, no indication. Probably the bank account has never been touched.
Yep.
And they've left the car there, just vanished.
Yeah, just gone.
And that happens in the UK. It'll happen most places around the world. You know, so I know some people, the guy in America, he deals with missing people. He tries and finds out where they've gone or why they've disappeared. I can't remember his name, but I will find out about that now. So he just brought me back to it now then. One of the other cases, what I find very interesting, is about a rabbit.
Oh, yeah, this one. This is probably my favorite case, and once again, I didn't personally work on it, but it is just really bizarre. It took place, I believe, it was in 2011, I think June. In June or July 2011, and there was a lady that was, I believe, coming home from work, and she was going down Route 15 from Flagstaff to a place called Loop, L-E-U-P-P. And this route is about 35 miles long. It was about 1 in the morning, and she hadn't been drinking or anything. She was coming home from work. And so, anyway, she's driving down this road all, once again, by herself, and she notices this red orb that's about 800 feet in the air. Seems to be, she reported it as basketball size, but I think it may have been a little bigger myself. About 800 feet in the air, and it's really bright in the middle, and then the light kind of falls off around it. But as she's driving down this road, you know, it approaches within 50 yards of her car and starts tracking her. And so she's kind of getting creeped out a little bit. But the road curves, and she had to take her eyes off of it to keep from just driving off the road. And then when she looked up, she didn't see the red orb anymore, but there was a white orb that was smaller right off the left side of the road. And it starts pacing her as well. And it tracks her for probably a quarter mile. And then suddenly it shoots straight up in the air and heads off to the east. And so anyway, she's kind of freaked out about that. But when she gets to her apartment, and it's got a dirt parking lot, and I believe it's on the reservation as well. Well, she was driving 2008 Toyota Yaris. Let's see here. Yeah, it shot straight up. And when she went to pull into her designated park, her headlights lit up this rather large rabbit type. It was about 37 inches high. It was as high as the hood of her car and about just under 2 feet wide. She said the ears were together, but they were kind of sticking towards the back of it. And it was just sitting there. And it had these rather large black eyes that didn't reflect at all. And so I saw the photos of where she had left the car to where the what looked like footprints of the rabbit were. And she said she got within 3 feet of it, but the photos to me looked more like she was about 6 feet from it. Anyway, she called her boyfriend inside the apartment, and she just sat there and didn't know what to do. She was afraid to get out. This thing looked so odd. Wasn't doing anything, just sitting there. But after about 10 minutes, she decided to abandon her car, turned off the engine and ran into her apartment. Excuse me. But anyway, the next day, the investigators came out. Car was still sitting there. And it was really hard packed dirt. But they were able to find some evidence of footprints, what looked like footprints where this mysterious weird rabbit had been. And the color of the rabbit, I guess, was kind of white and brown. Where it really gets strange is, and MUFON became involved with this one, they looked at the car. They started investigating the car quite a bit. And I talked to the guy personally that did some very intelligent individual that did the investigation on the car. The woman next day had migraine headaches where normally she didn't. So that was something too. But they found the car a lot of, like right above where the driver was, and then right behind the driver's door was magnetic now, just heavily magnetic, where it would move a military compass from more than 3 foot away from the car. Now, over the course of a week, the magnetism diminished to where you'd have to get just a few inches, but it was still there. I was looking at the report, I didn't see it, but the investigator, I'm going from memory here again, said that they found radiation on the passenger door. And that they sure don't come from the factory with that. So And for some reason, they took an oil sample out of the car. And that was odd, too. It seems that the oil in the car had changed composition. She used a synthetic blend of Valvoline motor oil. And, you know, they ran it against a known sample. And it had, it showed traces of sodium nitrate in the oil.
How strange.
Yeah. Now, there's another case that's something similar happened to, like a year or so afterwards out in New York, where this doctor who was here on a green card, he was a foreigner, but he was here legally, worked in, he was a doctor, I think in a psychiatric hospital, but he was traveling through a wooded area to his home in New York. I remember, I think it was Christmas Eve. He was listening to Christmas music, and he sees this, like, big blue light come towards him, and his car quits, the radio quits, the car dies, and this thing comes up to him and shines a light down on his car, and the light doesn't go all the way to the ground. It stopped about a foot off the ground, which we sure can't do that. I guess it started, I believe it started getting warm in the car. He exited the car, I know that. And anyway, eventually it stopped shining its light and took off. I'm not sure if there was missing time involved or not. I don't remember. But anyway, he proceeded on to his house. Once the crafter left, the car would start. And the same guys that investigated the one on the reservation here investigated that one, or at least one of the people were. And what they found with it is it had become radioactive and magnetic, just like the other one. The oil composition had changed in structure, and the engine, the metal in the engine had changed structure too. And they were forking it. Yeah, and this was a Mitsubishi in this case, and they were able to find another model that was only 5 serial numbers away, so they were on the assembly line at the same time. So they were checking it back and forth, and they wanted to do more tests on it, but the guy was, since he was here on a work visa, he was afraid of being deported, so, you know, he decided, you know, he didn't want to cooperate further.
Right.
But he did call the investigators about a week or so later and ask them, what'd you do to my car? It's now getting 50% better gas mileage than it did before. And they hadn't done anything.
God, that's amazing.
Yeah, so that, I thought that was another fascinating case. Yeah, it's interesting with the radioactivity and some of this magnetism. You know, when they become magnetic, there are parts that become magnetic that shouldn't. You know, plastics are suddenly magnetic.
Nice thing.
And yeah, and talking to the chief investigator, on the New York case, and like I said, he looked at the other one too. He was wondering if the magnetism might be a monopole for whatever reason, and he was developing a new protocol for testing for that. But, he would have liked to have had the car longer to study, because who knows what it would have really revealed.
Yeah, God, you would have found lots of different things what had happened to it then. It's just a shame it happened like that. Where this guy maybe shouldn't have been in the States and all that carry on. If he'd have been a normal bloke, he'd have probably said, yeah, come on, let's find out about this. Let's do some tests. Why am I getting more mileage? Why am I getting more out of my car than I have done?
Yeah, because someone's causing it, that's for sure. And now both of those cars, you know, the alternators weren't any good either. The alternators had to be replaced on both of them. And I know the one that happened on the Indian Reservation, the water pump needed to be changed too. So,
right. Yeah, but, I find it all fascinating, Russell, when things like that happen.
Oh, so do I, and that's why I do this work, is these are the sort of cases that, investigators live for. Because, quite honestly, most of the cases we investigate are really, they can be explained, and a lot of times it's just people's imagination getting carried away with them.
Yes. I know.
Yeah.
But far too often, what people see, they see. They know it's a UFO. They know it's an alien craft. But if you're coming off a photo, that photo can be many things. You see that as well with photos.
Oh, yes, absolutely. So, people, though, with all the smartphones out there nowadays, if people see these things, try to either video them or get photos of them, because we, like MUFON, they have some of the best experts around for analyzing photos and videos. The stuff that they can pull out of them is just truly amazing to me. And try to remember to get, a photo or video. Now, the lady in the one car with the rabbit case, she did try to get a photo of the orbs, and it didn't show up on the screen. She could, when she was pointing her phone at it, she could see the front of the car, the road and everything, but it didn't show up. So,
right.
Yeah, so that's interesting, too. It seems that a lot of these UFOs seem to defy our laws of physics. Like the one in New York that shined the light down, but it didn't go all the way down to the ground. That, from our experience, we can't do it. And I gave it a lot of thought on how it could be doing that. And going back to my physics in college, I hope I'm getting this right. I know I'll hear it if I don't. Someone will correct me for sure. But I think if you created a heavy enough gravitational field, magnetic field, you could probably stop the light waves. Yeah, but on the other hand, how do you do that yet not have it so severely affect the person in the car and the car itself? I don't know. But it's just interesting. But they seem to defy our laws of physics, which tells me we need to take another look at our laws of physics, because we're missing something here.
And I'm sure in time we'll sort all that out.
Oh, I'm sure we will. Yeah, I'm sure we
will.
And
I'm sure
and probably,
we could do it now, really. But as where things are going now, they're not telling us or what they know now and what technology we have now, what's hidden.
Well, yeah, and if you think about it, the stuff that we know about as just normal citizens, by the time we know about it, it's old news. I mean, it's pretty much outdated.
Yeah.
So the real cutting-edge stuff, who knows what they're doing?
Oh, God, yeah. I think, we're getting near the time now. Got 10 minutes left anyway, yeah. I know we can talk about the Phoenix Lights because you were there at the same time.
Yeah, I did personally see those. I wasn't with MUFON at the time. But at first, I'll tell you, I was in my backyard and I had a pet chihuahua that, I'd let out to go to the bathroom, and I'd always stay with her because we have hawks and owls in the area, and I didn't want her becoming lunch for them. But so it was just after dark, and I went out with her and set her down, and I was looking up to the northeast from where I'm at here in Scottsdale, and it looked like, I believe there were 5 lights just kind of strung out across the McDowell Mountains. Now, as far as I know, I haven't heard anyone else report the lights over in that area, but I watched them for probably between 10 and 20 minutes. And they were just sitting there. But I just found them odd. I didn't know what they were. Initially, to me, they looked like blimps that were lit up at night. You know, the way you see them at different events.
Yes,
but,
yeah.
But you know, I'm looking at them, and it's like, you know, we've never had five blimps at one time. You know, even when we had the NFL Super Bowl here, we only had one. So I found it odd, and, you know, I didn't think about it too much. And then I went back inside the house for a while. I wish I'd taken photos of it in retrospect, but, you know, I wasn't thinking, oh, a UFO, a major UFO event here. To me, I was still thinking that, well, maybe they're balloons or something. You know, there's some event going on.
Yeah.
But then around, I think it was probably around 10 o'clock, because that's usually time I took the dog out again for last time before we went to bed. And they were up over South Mountain, which is on the south side of Phoenix. And that's one where it looks like most of the people saw them. And I think there were seven lights in, or maybe six. But I'm looking at those again, and they're still just looking on. They're just sitting there. And that's when, I'm, you know, I'm thinking, you know, this place has never had that many, like, blimps or whatever. And so I remember thinking, I wonder if I'm looking at a UFO. Well, ends up I was. Still didn't take any photos of them, but I wish I had.
Because
the next day, yeah, it was all over, you know, the news. Now, I guess some people saw, like, a chevron-shaped craft, a huge one. Some people say it was a mile wide. That flew over Phoenix, and I didn't see that at all. But, you know, I wasn't in central Phoenix, but I guess it was absolutely silent and very stealth. You know, unless you were, like, right under it or almost under it, you wouldn't see it. Now, I know the lights didn't show up on radar because they did talk to the airport here, Sky Harbor, and supposedly it didn't show up on their radar at all. And they called it in military base, but military is denying everything.
No, they will do, will they? But there was,
yeah,
there was a lot of them were saying that there were flares.
Well, and that's a good point. Now, just southwest of the Phoenix area, we have the Barry Goldwater Gunnery Range, military gunnery range, where they do a lot of flares. And that night, after, you know, the lights had shown up in Phoenix, and certainly after I'd seen them over the McDowell Mountains, the military started dropping the flares on the gunnery range. But quite honestly, it's easy to tell flares from something else, particularly when you have photos of it. And like I said, the MUFON people have analyzed the photos, and they were not flares. I mean, I've seen how easy it is to tell if it's military flares. And these were just, they were absolutely motionless, and they stayed there for hours. Military flares don't do that. And plus, when you get the photos and you analyze it, there's always like a stream of smoke up off of the flares, and these didn't have that. So, yes, that night, the military started dropping flares. I don't know if they were doing it as a cover-up or if they had already had it planned, but
no.
To me, it doesn't matter. You know.
I probably thought they would have tried to cover up.
Could be. Yeah, no, they definitely weren't flares. Now, what was it? I don't know. Yeah, it was just odd. I don't know why they would show themselves over a major American city and not do anything other than that. They just sat there. And that was almost 20 years ago. Yeah, who knows? I don't know.
It was, all over the news, by all accounts. People took photos, took videos of it. I think it was even on TV.
Oh, I'm sure it has been. It's a big deal. And at Phoenix MUFON here, we have our meetings at the Arizona Historical Society, and which is a big museum. And we have it in their theater part. But they now have a display in their museum on the Phoenix lights. So it was that big of a deal that at least they're recognizing it, officially recognizing it. And so that's nice. I mean, word's getting out. And, you know, a lot of people do believe this stuff, which is good. And so hopefully, you know, as people see it, I just encourage people to, hey, take photos of it and, you know, report it to MUFON and we'll investigate it. We investigate everything that's reported to us, everything. So,
yeah.
But like I said, you know,
but
most of the, you know, we can
it's
explain.
It's good where people can go to see somebody and talk about it. Because probably many years ago they didn't know to go to.
Well, that's true. But now they can report it right on the MUFON website. There's a drop-down menu there where you can report it. And we have investigators all around the country, actually somewhat around the world. I mean, I know we're in the U.K. and other places. I think we have some in Europe, but we're real heavy in the United States. And so, you know, if they report it, you know, we'll investigate it, you know, the best of our ability. We're all volunteers. So, I mean, we can't go driving, you know, hundreds of miles because somebody saw a speck of light, you know, in the sky that's no longer there. But we do a good job. We really do. We have some excellent people.
I think in most states now, there's a representative of MUFON there.
Yeah, I think we're in every state. You know, some states have more investigators than others, but yeah, I believe we're in every state.
Well,
and like I said, if they report it, then we'll check into it.
Good. I'm so happy that there's people like you and all these voluntary people what will look into things like this, because in future, you know, without you, we won't get to know all these things.
Well, and that's true. And the more people that get involved, you know, maybe we'll come to the MUFON meetings or even some other organization, but really, you know, when you get start doing some hands-on investigating, that's when you learn what's going on. And that's why I did it. I'm one of, you know, in this world, there are people that are talkers and people that are doers. And I'm more of a doer. So
yes.
When I'm interested with something, I want to find out. And the best way to find out is become an investigator for one of the premier UFO organizations in the world. And that's why I did it. And I have learned a tremendous amount of knowledge as a result, and it is absolutely fascinating. You know, I mean, it's not like the TV show The X-Files. You know, it's not like that.
No.
A lot of times it's just plain hard work, but it is fascinating. You learn an awful lot. You meet some really nice people and interesting people, and you find out that there's a lot going on in this world that is just absolutely strange. But it's real.
As we say, out of this world.
Yes, absolutely. You know, I
well,
can't say that they're coming from another planet or whatever.
We're coming to the end of the show, unfortunately. It goes very quickly sometimes. Yes, thank you. Can you let everybody know where they can get in touch with you, Russell?
Oh, okay. Well, I have my own website, and it's got a link where you can send me an email. It is www.russellasbill.com, and it is spelled out all lowercase, www.russellasbill.com. And that's probably the best way, or, you know, come to a Phoenix MUFON meeting and just ask, talk to me. I'd be glad to meet you and talk with you. And Phoenix MUFON has their own website. It's www.phoenixmufon.com. And we have really
wonderful,
friendly people there.
And
you know,
they can find
speakers.
You on Facebook as well.
Oh, yeah, I'm on Facebook. You know, fairly new. I'm still learning how to use it. But, yeah, I am on Facebook.
And if they get in touch with you, you will reply back to them.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. You know, if you contact me, I will always get back with you as quick as I possibly can. And no question, you know, if you feel You know, if you're not comfortable with your question, don't worry about that. I hear all kinds of strange things. So I'm not judgmental at all. So
that's good. Yeah, that's good to know, because people do get frightened and they think, oh, if I say something, is something going to happen? And yes, it's good, but you brought that subject out about that as well.
Yep. So I'd love to hear from people.
Oh, lovely. Anyway, thank you, Russell, for coming on the show. I'm sure I will keep in touch with you, and because I like to keep in touch with people, because if I have an interesting story to tell, I will let you know as well.
Oh, please do. I'm always wanting to hear interesting stuff.
Right. You enjoy your weekend. Thank you so much for coming on the show.
Well, thank you, sir.
Soon.
I've enjoyed it. Sounds good.
Thank you. Bye.
Bye, buddy.
Bye.